Well, joining me now on the phone is Greg Kelly. He's president of the Service Employees International Union and Healthcare Illinois. And that's actually Illinois, Indiana, and what, another half dozen states, Greg? I'm sorry, I couldn't give you the full title, or that would take all of our time, I think.
That's right. But Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, and Kansas.
All right. Well, Greg, thanks. Thank you so much for joining me. And part of the reason I wanted to have you on is the fact that it's July 1st, and today is the first day of the new increase in the minimum wage in Chicago and a number of Cook County suburbs to $12 an hour. It's good and it's bad in your view, right?
Yeah, we think obviously that after a lot of good work, getting to $12 is a good thing, but we don't think it goes far enough. We argued even years ago that 15 at a minimum was the way to go. But obviously we're happy to get to 12 at this point, but there's no question that 12 isn't enough, and we believe 15 is right now the way to go.
Now, I know the mayor has defended going from 12 this year, $13 next year, that he basically said this was kind of an accommodation to allow businesses to kind of prepare themselves for it, and also to try to figure out if they're the issue of basically marketability and economics that didn't necessarily put the city at a disadvantage with surrounding suburbs. Tell me what you think of that rationale.
Well, I think it's, he's coming up with a rationale after the fact. I mean, I think the truth of the matter, and there's been a number of studies that have shown that raising the minimum wage doesn't cost jobs. That in fact it's a boon to the economy. Certainly can understand the idea of stretching out the increase, which is why we've said that you've got to tie an increase to inflation. And we just, $12 just simply isn't enough. No one can even rent an apartment in Chicago making $12 an hour. And you're talking about people who actually work full-time jobs. So we think $12 is good. $13 will be better next year, but it's certainly not enough, though.
When you look at the $12 minimum wage in the city, you're still looking statewide.
That's right.
At what, $7.50?
$8.25,
sorry.
Yeah, that's actually the point that we've been trying to make, that 15 statewide really would help ease some of the challenge that, I think some of the city and the suburbs are saying they have, but even in Missouri, they're looking at possibly raising the minimum wage statewide, which, if it passes, actually would exceed Illinois, I believe, by $3 or $4. So everyone recognizes that the minimum wage right now is just far too low, and we're obviously pushing to get it higher here in Illinois.
Well, and I know, obviously, your union is very politically active, and we saw during the Democratic primary campaigns, basically, all of the gubernatorial candidates, including the nominee, J.B. Pritzker, supporting the fight for $15, as you say. Does Springfield understand that dynamic?
I think so. The General Assembly, by the way, actually passed 15 last year, and it was vetoed by Governor Rauner. But it was passed with majorities in the House and the Senate. But for Rauner's veto, we'd be on a path to 15. So there's a great understanding that in Illinois, the minimum wage is just far too low.
Is 15? That term livable wage keeps getting thrown around.
Yeah.
And what is the difference between $12 an hour and $15 an hour as far as achieving what is necessarily a living wage?
Yeah, to be blunt, 15, frankly, isn't a livable wage in Chicago. And so we think it certainly gets us further down the road. When you raise the minimum wage of workers, $1, $2 here, you're talking about people who are going to contribute significantly to the economy. You're talking about people that are going to be able to pay their bills. It's a significant thing when you raise the minimum wage. for working people.
When people make the argument that minimum wage is intended to be kind of a starter salary, that it's a, you know, that it's not supposed to be the sustainable salary, but it's supposed to be kind of the entry point into going further in a career or in life. How do you respond to that?
I think that used to be true. Our economy has changed so much in the last 20 to 30 years that people that make minimum wage today aren't high school students just out with no skills. You're talking about people who have attained certifications and education and just are not making ends meet. They're old. They tend to be older now. They aren't simply workers in fast food, and we think fast food workers should make more as well. But we're talking about people who care for our elderly, that work in hospitals, that work in nursing homes, and they're at minimum wage doing very important work. Even folks who work with our children, our young people, are making minimum wage. And so the minimum wage isn't the stereotype of the minimum wage worker. Just doesn't apply anymore, given the changes in our economy.
And is that part of that transition in the economy from going from obviously becoming a much more service-oriented economy than, you know, traditional kind of the days of manufacturing, that kind of
thing? That's right. That's absolutely right. Our members, for example, work in healthcare, and they work in hospitals that make, you know, they're the biggest employers in the state. And they make billions of dollars, and they're paying many workers close to minimum wage or at minimum wage. The other thing about the minimum wage is that it doesn't simply help those workers who are at minimum wage. We're also talking about bumping up the floor so that those somewhere just above the floor can do better. So that's it. When you have a nursing home worker, a hospital worker making minimum wage, caring for our sick and our elderly, the hope is that their wages would go up as well. It's hopefully beneficial to everybody and not just those at the minimum.
And I believe San Francisco, their $15 minimum wage goes into effect today. Is that kind of maybe a harbinger of things to look for?
We hope so. Seattle sort of showed the way forward on this, and then it just took fire. The state of California is on the path. The state of New York on the path, and many cities are on the path because folks just cannot survive on our current minimum wage.
We're speaking with Greg Kelly, the president of Service Employees International Union Healthcare Illinois, Indiana, and a few other states as well. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. We're joined on the phone by Greg Kelly. He's the president of Service Employees International Union Healthcare, Illinois, Indiana, and a few other states. Greg, I know we were talking about minimum wage, but I'm wondering if we could shift gears here to the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court decision on Wednesday in the case Janus versus AFSCME, a case with a significant ruling against public employees unions, basically saying that though unions have to represent workers, non-members don't have to contribute fair share fees to the union. That has the effect of perhaps dramatically altering and realigning the public employees unions, their representation, as well as their political activity. How does Service Employees International Union Healthcare adjust?
Well, so first I would say that we were not surprised by the decision.
Correct.
We were disappointed, of course, but not surprised. I would say that what we've said is what we've said all along. It's one court decision, and it won't prevent our members from coming together to fight for what they deserve for themselves and their communities. But I would also say for our union in particular, we've been under the gun, if you will, of right wing attacks for a number of years. We experienced a case, a precursor case to Janus called Harris versus Quinn, which essentially created a fair share situation, the elimination of a fair share situation for home care workers in Illinois. And so we felt that it was obviously challenging in 2014, but for us, it was about reconnecting with our members, having our members understand the importance of sticking together and fighting for their union. And fighting with their union. So it's challenging, but we think our members are prepared, particularly given this environment. They understand the value of their union and want to stick with it. So it's changed our lives, and it will change, but I think it may change for the better because our members understand the importance of being with their union.
I have a story in today's Tribune about maybe some of the political ramifications of this, but David Yepsen, a good friend of mine who formerly headed the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at SIU Carbondale, and he basically said he believes this to be an energizing and motivational moment for unions, not just public employees unions, but all unions, and that this kind of has been the history of the labor movement of of attacking organized labor. And be careful if you support this union. David Yepsen's advice is be careful what you wish for, because the unions may come back stronger than ever.
I think that's right. I mean, I think at the end of the day, a union is folks coming together to make decisions about their lives. And people don't like you taking away their right and their ability to do that. And so that's, I think, really what's at stake here, given this moment. We talked about the minimum wage. The minimum wage is a big issue because of income inequality. And, you know, having the right to have a union is the most fundamental way that we can address income inequality. And workers understand that today. I think there are some changes in the labor movement that really have made people see that it is through a union that we're really going to be able to tackle the big economic issues like economic inequality and wealth inequality.
Obviously, there is a potential impact politically, even though those fair share due payments were not to go to political activity. There are still questions raised about, well, if I don't have to be a member of the union, but I can enjoy the benefits that are collectively bargained by that union, why should I pay dues at all? Now, granted, you know, that's somewhat of an argument. You know, people have always said, what am I getting for my dues, right? But it seems to me now, and as you mentioned from the Harris versus Quinn case in 2014, that there may be more kind of a internal membership massaging going on than as much as the external politics of the past.
I think that's right. I've been involved in the labor movement for over 20 years now, but I can tell you that the level of activity and interest and coming together and fighting is unlike anything I've seen in my 20 years of the labor movement, because people understand more acutely what's at stake in this moment. I think that's, if this was 3 years ago or 5 years ago, I think it would be a bit more concerned, but I just think there's something about the environment that we're in politically, that folks are saying, you know, you can't take away my union. It's my choice, not yours. That I have personally found very gratifying.
Well, what do you think has changed politically? I mean, is it just from the nature of the White House, or?
I think, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, or is it something more, you know, more grassroots?
Yeah. I think it's all of that. I think it's you know, the state situation. It's the federal situation. It's the wealth inequality that everybody sort of feels, even though we have low unemployment, people are working longer and getting paid less. The checks aren't getting any bigger. Everybody sort of feels it. And then, yes, I think there is some grassroots work that's being done that really reflects the current environment, and it's pushing folks forward.
you, of course, are in a, as I said, very politically active union. And it seems like it is the public sector unions that's a reflection, too, of kind of that economic transition that we've seen from, you know, the more manufacturing and that kind of nature to more service-oriented. How does this ruling ultimately affect, though, the union's political activities?
I think that I don't know that it changes for us. I think we're going to be assessing how it has an impact. Obviously, it's going to have some financial impact on what we're able to do. But I think for us, you know, political work has been more than just about contributing dollars. It's also about people in motion and connecting with neighbors and really, as you referred to, the grassroots work of organizing politically is really where we, I think, you know, we come in the strongest and won't be impacted by this. In fact, I think people are more adamant about volunteering and wanting to do political work than they were just even a few years ago. So it isn't simply just about money. It's about people power, as we like to say. And we're seeing an uptick in interest in politics amongst our members.
But, I mean, if there is a, quote, silver lining for organized labor in this, is it the potential that the fact is the Democratic nominee is J.B. Pritzker, who's a billionaire and is able to self-fund his campaign and is, you know, trying to jumpstart other campaigns on the Democratic side, that if there is some financial loss in support to various Democrats in the General Assembly, it's the potential that you have a candidate in Pritzker who can make up for that.
I think that's true. I think, you know, JB has already sort of come out in support of labor, and obviously our labor, we're happy that he supports us. And we're going to do what we can to get him elected, because we just can't afford four more years of Rauner. But at the end of the day, it really is about workers on the ground, you know, talking to their neighbors, their coworkers, and getting in motion. You know, when you're talking about, you know, political races in our state and in this country that are just so expensive, you know, it's kind of a statement of the moment that we're in. But at the end of the day, it really is about people power. And I think our members are already in motion and ready to do what's necessary.
That's Greg Kelly, the president of Service Employees International Union Healthcare Illinois, Indiana, and et cetera, et cetera. Greg, thank you so much. I know you're heading out on travels. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for the time.